the meteorologists themselves are really awesome, but the network has a tendency to really hype up storm coverage. And it isn't the way that the meteorologists are presenting it, it's the way that it's promoted. You know, the commercials did one thing where they coined one of them a COVID cane, and I actually went off on them on that. I mean, I really, I made a very public bashing of the Weather Channel. You're feeding our fear. That's what you're taking the two biggest fears of people, COVID and hurricanes, and morphing it into one giant fear. And it's irresponsible and it's ridiculous.
We believe that you are strong by design, and you were made in God's image to have a strong body, mind, and spirit. You're listening to the number one strength and health authority podcast in the world. So let's get ready to unlock your potential and transform your life in today's episode.
Well, hey, what's going on? Welcome to another episode of the Strong by Design podcast. And as always, we have new episodes coming out once a week, every Wednesday. Although recently we've been having them come out Wednesday and Saturday. We have so much awesome content that's coming out. So if there's things that you want to see, go make sure to go back and listen to some old stuff and all over the spectrum with what we bring to you. And today I have an incredible guest that I'm very excited to have on the show. He's someone that really pours his heart out into his community. We see that time and time again. He's a man that we see just engaging with his family and finding out the balance between work and family and all of these things. But I just want to welcome to the show today, meteorologist, weatherman, Tampa local extraordinaire, Dennis Phillips. So Dennis, thank you so much for joining me on the Strong by Design podcast. Everyone at the office kind of jokes with me because when I was a kid, I wanted to be a weatherman and I never grew up, but I'm always the one like telling everybody what's going on, what's coming up, you know, as far as the weather. I'm not originally from Florida, so we've only been here for 2 years. And actually, we started following you before we even moved down here as we were trying to figure out what do we do with hurricanes and how do we approach it. And I don't know, it might have been our realtor that mentioned you to us, but I know from a personal experience just what an impact you've made for our family, walking us through hurricanes. And I was talking with my wife this morning and I said, hey, what do you want me to tell Dennis for you?
Where'd you guys move down from?
We moved from Colorado, from Denver.
All right.
Yeah. And so completely different, and right?
My daughter, she's going to be going out there. She's finishing up her doctorate in occupational therapy, and she's going to be working at one of the children's hospitals as her internship or whatever it is out there.
Is she going to be in Denver? Is she going to be north of Denver?
Denver.
Okay. Probably, I think it's in Aurora.
Yeah.
Is where. Yeah. Yeah. So that's great hospital. We loved children's. They had a little branch up north where we were at that it was just easier just to take our kids directly to children's because usually you'd end up getting sent there anyway. So, but such an incredible hospital, and we miss it a little bit now that we're down here.
Yeah, big change from there to here on so many levels. Literally every aspect of life.
So many
could be different.
Oh man, everything is different. We love it. I mean, we love the warm weather. My sister was just here this last weekend, actually visiting from Colorado, and we're all freezing, right? Because we've been going through this cold chill, and you know, we're trying to stay warm. We took them on a dolphin tour on Sunday, which I think was one of the coldest days that we've had, at least in the morning it was. And we're all in blankets, bundling up, and you know, trying to stay warm. And my nephew, who came with her, is like, "This is great. It's so warm here." you acclimate quickly, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it's the same way with the heat, although it's funny, you know, a lot of people up north, it gets really hot too. And there's, you know, Floridians always think, well, yeah, but we have to deal with the summer. There's a lot of places that get a heck of a lot hotter than Florida in the summer. It's just the humidity is what, you know, kind of gets.
Right. We lived in Iowa for 5 years and Iowa was terrible.
Oh, yeah, get 100 all the time.
Really hot, very humid and no beaches. So, I mean, at least we can, you know, there's something about being at the beach and it's like that breeze that comes in off the water that at least there's something there to cool you off even slightly. And you're at the ocean. So, I mean,
yeah,
we're not really complaining. But people love, I mean, you talk to any Iowan and they will tell you how their state is 100% the best state they've ever been to. You know, I mean, people just love where they're from. So, but when I was in elementary school, there was a weatherman in Colorado. His name was Mike Nelson. And Mike came and visited our elementary school and was talking about weather. And he worked for Nine News. And the story that I remember in particular was that he went on the air and his Nine News pin was upside down for, and it made a six instead of a nine. And I just remember him saying he got in trouble for that. But that was kind of like my initial spark into weather was that. And then there was a tornado. We were at someone's house and there was a tornado. There's not a lot of tornadoes in Colorado, but there's some. And I remember the storm and it traumatized me somehow to where, to this day, any kind of, like, I don't get scared from a lot of things, but severe weather will still make me very anxious and still makes me feel like, it's like I always feel like it's the cartoon with the anvil, where no matter where I go, the thing is chasing me and it's going to land on me no matter what I do. And so again, just so appreciative. That was what I asked my wife, what should I tell Dennis today? And she said, let him know that I appreciate how straightforward and calm his presence is during anything that's going on. And so I think that that's for me and so many people in our area, man, it's so good that, you know, I can flip on. I was actually just looking. I have two searches in my Facebook account. It's either my wife or it's Dennis Phillips. So I have to click search and you're like right at there at the top. You're very consistent in saying, hey, I'm not trying to make hype of this. I'm trying to give it to you straight. Here's what I'm reading. Here's what I'm seeing. Make the proper precautions. And so thank you so much for doing that and for just what you bring to the Tampa community.
Well, you know, a couple of things. You mentioned about you had this interest since you were a child, as did I. I decided I wanted to be a meteorologist when I was 6 years old. We lived in Seattle. I was born in Seattle. But it wasn't because of any severe weather, because typically Seattle doesn't get a ton of severe weather.
Right.
It was because it was Christmas Eve, and the local weatherman on Christmas Eve was tracking Santa. And I thought, what a cool job. You can track yes. Santa and get paid for it. And it's a true story. That is when I decided I wanted to be a meteorologist. Right. Now, we moved to Detroit, and the year that we moved to Detroit, it was known as a super outbreak of tornadoes. A really famous outbreak. It was back in the mid-70s. And it was literally, there were tornado warnings everywhere. And I was kind of like you. I was really, really excited. I wasn't particularly anxious. I wanted to go out and chase them, you know, at that point. And I got so interested in it, I started to write letters, you know, before email. I started to write letters to the local weather people. Jerry Hodak, Sonny Elliott. These were guys in Detroit back in the mid-70s. And, you know, in a 2 months, they would send me a letter back and maybe a little map or something. And, you know, nowadays it's so different because 10 years ago, when people would walk up to me in public, 99% of the time it would be, oh, I watch you on TV. Now, 99% of the time, and I'm not exaggerating, 99% of the time, I follow you on Facebook.
Yeah.
I can completely change.
The only time I ever watch the news is when I'm in a hotel. It's like it's there and available. So I saw your weathercast on Friday. It was my wife and I's 15-year anniversary, and so we stayed in Clearwater for the night. Thank you. Yeah, and so I'm like, hey, it's Dennis. Dennis is on. He's talking about, you know, the weekend and things along those lines. So
yeah, it's true. It's really changed it, and not to mention the direct interaction as well, because I sent a letter, and a couple of months later I got a response. When someone messages you, a lot of times, if you don't get back to them in a reasonable period of time, you know, like, hey, I emailed you or I messaged you. How come I haven't heard back from you? I mean, it has completely changed the way that media people interact with the public. I think in a good way and sometimes an unrealistic way as well, because, you know, hurricane season, I will literally, if a storm is anywhere near us, I will literally get thousands of messages. And I can't go through
what
all.
What can
of
you do?
I just can't do it. So I miss a lot of them, and it's something that I've learned to, you know, try to do my best at. But it's very much more of an on-demand kind of a thing as opposed to just passively watching. People expect that instant gratification. I mean, it's like Amazon. It's the same way. You know, if it used to be that you'd watch TV, packages would deliver in 6 to 8 weeks. I mean, if you would get in 6 to 8 hours, you know, hey, what's taking us so long? So it certainly has changed.
Yeah. We were joking with my sister because they live up in the mountains and, you know, even this is still fast. It takes like 2 or 3 days for a package to get to them. Where here in Florida, it's you can buy something and sometimes it's same day. You know, you can order it in the morning and they'll deliver to you in the afternoon. It's crazy how fast stuff. And our kids have no idea.
Yeah.
You know, it's this weird expectation now of course things should go that fast. Why wouldn't they go that fast?
Yeah, and we do fundraising. We make some of our own tumblers and whatnot that we donate part of the proceeds to Children's Miracle Network and All Children's Hospital and Feeding Tampa Bay. And it's the same thing. During hurricane season, we get a lot of orders. And it's just my wife and I. Literally, it's my wife making these tumblers in her office and me in the dining room that looks like a sweatshop in the dining room because it's just got boxes everywhere and tumblers everywhere and I'm packaging it up and everything. And we even put on there, it takes 4 to 6 weeks. But inevitably, there's people saying, oh, I can't believe it took as long as it did. I'm like, yeah. It's because you have two people doing the whole thing. We're not Jeff Bezos, you know. So it's just fascinating.
Yeah, it's funny because that you mentioned that. That's when I first moved down here. I see. So your brand is rule number 7, right? And that there it is. Rule number 7. Don't freak out until Dennis freaks out.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I want to tell you this story. The other day when that tornado came through Dunedin, because remember I'm telling you that severe weather comes after me. So we live close to you, like a couple neighborhoods over. And the tornado alarm, our phones go off and say there's a warning. So we grab our kids, we go downstairs. We just have a little powder room. It's like the only room in the house that doesn't have windows. And I mean, if we ever have to everyone fit in there, I don't really know how we're going to do it, but we'll get the kids in first and, you know, we'll do our best to do what we got to do. But you hop on live. And so the kids are just, they all fell asleep. They're just laying on the ground sleeping and I'm watching you live.
It's like 1:30 in the morning.
This is 1:30 in the morning. Yes. And all of a sudden you are like, okay, this thing's coming right at us. I've never had to do this before. I'm going to get off the live. And I'm going to get my girls and bring them down and get them into the bathroom. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, if Dennis is freaking out, I'm freaking out. Like, everyone get in the bathroom. What are we going to, you know, I'm like, of course. And you're like, this hardly ever happens. And I'm like, of course it's happening now because I've moved here. And so it's coming after me.
Yeah, tornadoes in our area. I obviously remember it well. It was the one that went into Dunedin and did some damage. But 99.999% of the tornadoes in our area do nothing. They usually don't cause it. Although a couple of weeks ago, there was, you know, it's the whole pool cage thing. The pool cage might get knocked over or there could be you know, stuff like that. But, you know, when you're looking at a radar signature, you don't know how far off the ground it is or if it's on the ground. You don't know. Now, there is something known as a debris ball, which you can see it on the radar signature. And that is obviously an indication that it is on the ground because you're getting debris. We weren't getting debris with that, but I'm certainly not going to take a chance because at that point, you know, tornadoes bounce. I mean, the ones up north and the ones in Colorado and the ones in the plains, they don't. They stay on the ground and they just plow through everything.
Yes.
And ours don't do that. Very rarely will you ever have a tornado that's on the ground and staying on the ground. But yeah, when that moved on shore from a waterspout to a tornado and it literally was going right over our neighborhood, I'm like, I just can't take a chance. So I went up and got my daughter and got my wife and got my son and brought them downstairs. And 30 seconds later, I'm like, no, we're good. And they went back to bed. But yeah, there was that. And I've got a lot of people say the same thing. They're like, man, holy cow, if he's going to go get his kids and bring them downstairs, then we're going to do it too. And then I jumped on the air in 3 minutes. And
you did. You were back quick.
As it went north.
Mm-hmm. And so I went to school in Kansas.
No, so you know.
And there was actually, I don't know if you remember this at all. I think it was maybe 2008, there's a F5 that went and took out the whole town of Greensburg, Kansas.
I remember it. Number one. But Yeah, I mean, they get a lot of them. I don't remember that one specifically.
Yeah, so this one, my parents were driving. So the school I went to was in Haviland, Kansas, which is like 10 miles away from Greensburg. My parents were coming from the north down into town, and that's where my sister was. And I wasn't there, but my sister got a hold of my parents and were like, you got to turn around. There's a tornado coming right your direction. So they went back up and were going to come back through Greensburg. And the tornado was going northwest and went through that town, but went north of Haviland. And when they went and tried to go through Greensburg, they couldn't because of all of the debris and stuff. So they ended up having to go back around and like we're driving all. I mean, it totally would have hit them and they probably wouldn't be around anymore. But when I think of a tornado, I always think of like these massive things that we experienced in the Midwest. And then I saw the base of a tornado here in Florida basically going through an intersection. Okay, this was like an epiphany for me. Okay, a Florida tornado is not the same experience as a tornado in the Midwest. Yeah,
the overwhelming majority are. Every now and again, like back in 97, I think it was, we had an EF3. The squall line came through here. We did not get the tornado, but it did form west of Kissimmee and hit a mobile home park and 42 people died.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it does happen occasionally. It's never going to happen in the summer. It's only going to happen with a cold front and a pretty vigorous one at that coming, you know, in the wintertime. But 99.99% of the time, they're EF0s. And like you said, they're very little. And they'll do pool cage damage and they'll do things
right
like that.
I think that
structural damage is incredibly rare. It happens.
And, yeah.
You know, and that's always a fine line because when I go on, you know, do a live or go on TV, I talk about the tornado threat. You know, I try to remind people. So like Kibbutzu is a perfect example. You know, I'm saying, look, the overwhelming majority of people are not going to be impacted at all by this, but there might be one or two people that could see this come through. And East Lake Woodlands was that spot with the one a few weeks ago. I mean, it didn't do huge damage, but it did enough damage to happen.
You don't want to be outside.
Yeah, exactly.
That's like my fear is being on the road. Like, so we had that storm coming through and I left work like an hour early just so I could get home before it hit. I literally walked in our door and we had that tornado warning that lasted for 15 minutes or whatever. I don't want to be on the road and feel like I'm stuck, you know?
There was a guy I used to work with forever ago. He was actually an anchor back in Salisbury, Maryland, which is my first job. He moved on to Court TV. His name was Greg Jarrett. But he was a guy, you probably don't remember, but there was video of him and a camera person. I don't remember where they were, but they were driving down the road. And sure enough, there was a tornado, a good size one. It was obviously up north. A good size one came through. He ditched his car and went under an overpass and hid under the overpass and was rolling video the entire time.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could see it as it cut across. And, you know, they always tell you that's not where you're supposed to go. But
right.
I don't know. I mean, you see a giant tornado, you want some kind of cover. I mean, I get it.
Yeah.
And he filmed the whole thing and it went right over. And
I do remember that.
It was pretty crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you see the drone footage of the one in Andover, Kansas?
That's the one I was talking about. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, that to be able to just see the bottom of it and see what it's doing and it's fascinating.
What?
And again, terrifying and all of the things that come with it. We're down here. I just want to mention this again. You have the rule number 7. I saw those bumper stickers and what made you start rule number 7? Why did you go with the number 7? Are there any other rules?
Because
that's the only rule I know.
Yeah, so there is a story behind it. So back in 2012, okay. Hurricane Isaac, the RNC, the Republican National Convention, was here in Tampa. And 3 days before, there was a hurricane coming directly toward Tampa. It was Hurricane Isaac. And everybody was freaking out. And they were talking about moving the RNC to Jacksonville. And it was just a huge thing. And I'm like, it's going to be okay. This is not a big deal, guys. It's going to stay west of us. It's not going to be that bad. And I was real confident with the forecast. So I just in about 5 minutes, I just jotted down these rules of things to remember when a storm's coming, because there were so many people who clearly didn't really know what to expect when a storm was coming and how to prepare, what to expect with the models, whatnot. And rule number seven, and it was literally just don't freak out, unless I'm freaking out, we're fine. I was talking about Hurricane Isaac, but that wasn't my general rule for every hurricane is coming this way. But it has kind of turned into that. Very much has turned into that. And it was, you know, and people even say, you got to be careful because you can't always tell people that everything's got to be okay. And I said, you're exactly right, which is why you need to listen to what the person you trust is saying, not just go on Facebook and read some blog or get some information that it's hard to put in context sometimes. So anyway, the bottom line is that's how it started. And I said it on air as well, and it just kind of resonated because what I was trying to do is reassure people that things were going to be okay, as opposed to scaring the bejesus out of everybody. And, you know, and there's some places and there's some people that rely on that kind of presentation to get viewership. And I'll be honest, I know not so much anymore. Still, I mean, I know quite a few of the meteorologists for the Weather Channel. And one of them I've known most of my life, Mike Seidel, who does a lot of on the scene, travel, chases the storms. You know, I've met Cantori many, many times and whatnot. But, you know, the meteorologists themselves are really awesome. But the network has a tendency to really hype up storm coverage. And it isn't the way that the meteorologists are presenting it. It's the way that it's promoted. You know, the commercials that, you know, that, you know, boom, 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 background music, try to get you. Yeah. They did one thing where they coined one of them a COVID cane. And I, during COVID, and I actually went off on them on that. I mean, I really, I made a very public bashing of the Weather Channel. And it was funny because clearly the person who did it, who came up with that concept, must have worked at Channel 8 locally, because his wife reached out to me and said, you know, why are you bashing this? I go, because you're feeding our fear. That's what you're taking the two biggest fears of people, COVID and hurricanes. Yeah. And morphing it into one giant fear, and it's irresponsible and it's ridiculous. And well, you shouldn't bash your colleagues. I go, this has nothing to do about being a colleague. This is about being irresponsible and scaring people. I take really seriously my job in terms of trying to, you know, my job has changed. I'll be honest. 20 years ago, 25 years ago, when I did this, I was probably just as guilty as anybody else. I don't think a lot of meteorologists. And I really believe this is true. I don't think their people are hyping things intentionally. Maybe the Facebook they do because they're doing it because they want to get likes and they want to get interactions. But I think most meteorologists that appear to be hyping, they're not hyping. They're just excited because they really kind of get that way with storms. I'm very much that way. I mean, you know, as a meteorologist and someone who's had a passion for severe weather all my life, I get fired up when a storm is coming. I mean, and that energy, I think, can come across, you know, if you're not careful, as hyping it. But I've learned, and it probably dated back to Charley in 2004. You obviously weren't here, but Charley in 2004 was our storm. It was the one.
Yeah, that's the one you reference often.
Well, I mean, it was. I mean, the Hurricane Center had a Cat 4 24 hours before hitting us. Right dead smack in the middle of Tampa Bay. And it was our storm. Everybody evacuated. I mean, we all really thought, by far, of any storm that we've had, including Irma, including Ian, including any other storm we've had that I've been here 30 years, it was the storm for us. And about 6 hours before the storm was supposed to hit us and the Hurricane Center still had us, bullseye, Cat 4 right over us, the mayor of Tampa, Pam Iorio, was on the set with us talking about how we were going to rebuild. And I looked around the newsroom and I sensed the fear in the community. And it was unlike anything I had seen since probably Irma afterwards was close to it. And I remember feeling that people did not need one more source of you're going to die. They needed a source of, you know what? This is not set in stone. this forecast. And I think we all know, living in the Bay Area, specifically in the Bay Area, these storms have a tendency to turn away from us more often than not. And that's not necessarily knocking on wood there. That's just the way it is. And there's a lot of meteorological factors that cause that to be the case. But at the end of the day, Mayor Iorio was saying, hey, we're going to rebuild, we're going to be okay. And at that point, I convinced myself that it was going to miss us. So they tossed it to me, and I said, Mayor Iorio, I think you're going to need to rethink this. I think this is going to miss us. I think it goes to Punta Gorda. And that was the benchmark of my career right there, because if I had been wrong, I'd be selling shoes right now, probably.
Yeah.
But I wasn't. And I was right, and I was the first person to say it. And Mayor Iorio's response to me was, well, I like your forecast the best. And it missed us. So yeah. And by the way, that's when I started wearing those ridiculous suspenders too. Because prior to that day, I'd had a jacket on every single day I'd ever done the weather for 15 years.
I love
Jay Crawford, our sports guy, who was kind of a stylish, fashionable, good-looking guy. Every now and again, he would wear a pair of suspenders. He's like, Dennis, you should get a pair of suspenders. Like, I don't know. Suspenders. Just get a pair. Well, I happened to put on that pair of suspenders when I was going in to cover that storm for no particular reason. And I was on the air 36 straight hours. And after the storm missed us, the station did all this research. Who did you watch? Who would you like? The overwhelming response, I had no idea if the guy's name was, but he was wearing a pair of suspenders.
Yeah.
And my boss goes, that's your niche stick. So that point on, I started, you know, I started wearing the suspenders, which
it became the requirement.
Like it or not, it kind of did.
Yeah.
But I really realized after that storm that, you know, my mom used to say you catch more flies with sugar than you do with vinegar.
Right.
And I just think I realized that people didn't need or want those hype. That, you know, there's always the, you know, the human mindset that you're going to look at wrecks when you drive by, you know, and there's that morbid curiosity. But at the end of the day, I think people really don't want it more than they think they do. They want to be reassured. Right. They want to have their hand held through a scary event.
Yeah.
What? And I've learned that's what I try to do.
Yeah, and I think that you want to make the right decision, you know? I mean, do I stay? Do I not? Is it safe? Is it not? Am I keeping my, you know?
Because I get people sitting there flat out asking me, should I leave? And they'll tell me their city they live in. Man, I can't answer that question.
Right.
Because, I mean, I will tell you, I have in the past, matter of fact, I did with Charlie, and there was a woman in a mobile home, and she talked about big trees that were very close to her mobile home. And I told her, I said, honestly, if you get a Cat 3 or Cat 4, which, by the way, Polk County did get Cat 3 winds with that storm. It went through Punta Gorda. It missed Tampa, but it went right to the middle of the state. It went right through Polk County. And I told her, I said, you know, it's probably better for you to go to a shelter with all those trees. And sure enough, a giant tree fell on her mobile home. And she said, she messaged me weeks later and said, the bed that I would have been laying in was literally a giant tree fell right on it. So you saved my life. You know, that's certainly that's the exception to the rule, because I can't be responsible for what people do. What I can do is tell them to my ability, the best of my ability, what I think it's going to do. And then they need to make their educated choice for their families and for themselves to keep themselves safe.
It was like a month and a half ago, maybe, when we had that stream. It was a of storms that came through, and you told people, hey, there's potential for coastal flooding. I think afterwards you came on and you apologized for not making it clear. I wanted you to know, I felt like you were very clear.
Yeah, you know what? I'll be honest, I thought I was clear too. I mean, we talked about that.
I just wanted to reassure you, I guess, a little bit, that from my perspective, I heard people saying that, I'm like, you specifically said you're going to get flooding on the coast. I remember, I knew it. We're not on the coast, you know. But I know that you said it. But to have the humility still to say, hey, maybe I wasn't as clear as I, you know what I mean? You could have been like, no, you're wrong, and got defensive. But
I would have, 25 years ago, I would have been that way.
Yeah.
I'd be like, no, what are you talking? And honestly, it's funny, because for a week prior to that storm, we talked about that. And there was no surprise that that was going to do what it did. I mean, it did exactly what we expected. And I thought that I was talking about it too much prior. I really did. I thought to myself, Dennis, you're beating people over the head with this over and over again. And, you know, And at the end of the day, there's always going to be people, and I think everybody knows this, no matter what your job is, there's always going to be some people out there that didn't get the message and they're looking for somebody to blame. And the weather person is certainly a very easy person to blame. And you know what? That goes with the job. And I'm okay with that because we get to take the credit when it's nice or when it works well. So I'll take the blame. But yeah, you're right. It frustrates me a bit when I feel like we really did our job. But clearly, if people are saying that they didn't know, then I could have done it better. And that's something to try to learn for what you could have done better.
Sure. Yeah, you're right. It comes with the territory. We did it in Colorado with snowstorms, you know.
Hard to predict.
You know, they're like, hey, they shut down the schools because we're going to get 6 to 12 inches of snow or whatever, and then you just get this little dust thing, you know, and people are like, well, you know, and I'm like, you guys, it's not like you're doing your absolute best to predict what's going to happen. And so maybe a little bit of grace comes into play there.
The storm's tough. To me, the hardest prediction out there is rain, snow lines. Because I'm sure they had it in Colorado, but when I lived up north, you would get part of your viewing area that would get rain and part of your viewing area that would get a foot of snow. And there's a line, there's a 540 line that actually that transition occurs. And sometimes it goes from rain or it goes from snow to sleet, you know, eventually to rain. And pinpointing where that is, to me, is the hardest prediction there is. Uh-huh. Way harder than a hurricane.
And Denver is, north to south, there's so much area to cover, you know, and South Denver, you know, they got a foot of snow, and where we're at in the north got nothing, you know, and so, but you're weathercasting to everybody. Yeah. I mean, it's the whole city.
Sure.
So it's one of those things. I've noticed that with the weather patterns here, although here I feel like clouds can go any direction that they choose, which is kind of a unique experience for us because, you know, there it's typically west to east and maybe in a northern direction a little bit. But here it's like had storms come from the west. They've come from the east, from the north, the south. So, but I do feel like there's a bit more predictability about the direction that things are going and when it's going to hit. And I just think that you guys do a really good job of informing us, even with these cold fronts that have come through with El Nino. Maybe you can explain El Nino because everyone thinks it's just a Chris Farley skit. And when you say it, it's actually a real thing. Maybe explain that just because I'm curious of your explanation of what El Nino is, what we're experiencing right now.
Yeah, it's been around for a long, long, long time. As a matter of fact, it got its name because El Nino is a transition of water off the coast of South America. And when that water would get exceptionally warm around Christmas time, the fishermen would note that their anchovy catches would decrease. They wouldn't get as much, they wouldn't do as well with their fishing because of the warm water. And I guess that has an impact on the anchovy crop. And so it's called El Nino because it happened around Christmas time, the Christ child. So what happens is it's pretty easy to look at now. We just see whether or not there's exceptionally warm water off the coast of South America and the Pacific. And if there is, it's El Nino. If it's exceptionally cold water, it's La Nina, the opposite of that. And El Nino has a really big impact on upper level winds. So if you get an El Nino in the summertime, it actually is a good thing for us traditionally because it limits the development of hurricanes. Because what happens is those upper level winds are impacted and hurricanes have a difficult time developing because those upper level winds kind of cut off the storms as they try to develop. But in the wintertime, it energizes the subtropical jet stream. There's two jet streams. There's a polar jet. Jet stream's a river of air that drives a lot of storms and the intensity.
It's the arrows on the map that you see.
And polar jets bring in cold air. Subtropical jets bring in storms in from the Gulf. And they originate across the Pacific. And that El Nino will energize that subtropical jet. So that means that storms that develop in the south in the wintertime are more likely to be stronger than they otherwise would and more numerous. And, you know, last July, we started saying it is going to be a really wet, stormy winter because of it. and it's happened exactly as it should. And El Nino will probably end in March or April, and we'll be kind of, we'll go to neutral. So it goes El Nino warm, neutral, average, La Nina cold. And so it doesn't just go from warm to cold, it transitions. The water temperature transitions from warm to cold, and when it's in the middle, it's neutral. And then there's really no impact one way or the other on hurricane season. So we'll probably be in a La Nina toward the end of hurricane season. We'll be neutral at the beginning of this hurricane season. And then it sounds like we're going to transition back to El Nino next winter too. So we might actually be seeing this all over again next winter.
Yeah.
I mean, people are like, how the heck can you predict a year in advance? You can't even get tomorrow's weather right. So there's truth to that. But that's what the long-range forecast is showing.
It's been nice, though. I mean, it's been a lot cooler this year than it was last year from our
It won't be tomorrow. Tomorrow's going to be like mid-80s. And
It's good, though.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be a nice change. A lot of people, look, I live in Florida for a reason. I like the warm weather.
Right. That's right. Still no snow, and so we're happy about that, you know. I haven't had to shovel anything since we've moved down here, so it's been great. Well, one of the reasons I wanted to bring you onto the show, Dennis, is because, yes, you're an amazing weatherman, and we appreciate your love and support and what you do for our community, but you also will be posting about your family and different things that you're doing with your family, and I just thought, man, here's a guy who loves his job, is dedicated to his work, is dedicated to his community, but I also see, I mean, it's Facebook, so maybe you're putting on a facade. I don't think that's true. but you seem to be a guy who loves his family, and I'm just curious, how do you balance that out? I mean, especially during hurricane season, you just said you did a weathercast for 36 hours straight. I mean, that's 36 hours where you're away from your kids, you're away from your wife. What does that look like for you? How do you balance that out? The it's not like the weather's waiting for you, you know, and you always, you know, you always have to be on to an extent, you know, and ready, you know, when, because again, weather is not based on an 8 to 5, you know, it's all over the place. Mm-hmm. So I'll just kind of turn it over. I don't know if you do anything intentional or not, but clearly there's something going on there that I thought, man, it would be good to hear your perspective on it.
Well, I mean, you're right. It absolutely is a challenge. And I'm very, very transparent with my home life, probably more so than my wife wants me to be, to the extent that everybody pretty much knows where I live, you know, you know, she's always a little nervous about that. And my take was, look, if somebody wanted to take me out, nowadays there are no secrets. You'd be able to find me. So, I mean, it doesn't really matter if you know where I live or not. But, you know, it is genuine. I think people, if on social media, there's a lot of stuff that you wonder, is it the real deal? But people are still people, and they know, they see through facades, and they see through when people are trying to be something that they're really not. I'm just a very transparent person with my family. And clearly, my job has a huge impact on our family life, and it makes it really challenging. I mean, I don't see my kids Monday through Friday because I go to work at 2 p.m, I get home at 1 a.m. So, you know, my wife pretty much handles everything during the week. I mean, I get up and drive them to school. I'll go to bed typically 3:30 in the morning, you know, and then we kind of trade shifts during the week where I'll get up a few mornings and she'll get up a few mornings, and then at least I get to see the kids for a half hour, 45 minutes, take them to school and then come back and take a nap. But, you know, honestly, my wife pretty much does everything. I mean, without her able to handle things the way that she does, I would be lost because you're right. I'm always on call, and they have accepted that's what dad does. And, you know, I do my best to, you know, always check in and, you know, but during the week it's tough. I mean, it really is. And
how many kids do you have?
I have 6 kids.
You have 6 kids?
I do. Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah. My oldest actually just turned 30. He's a doctor in New Orleans. He just got married a couple months ago. And my youngest is 9, my daughter, Ryan. So we've got Brett, who's 30. And we've got Shay, who's 27. We've got Kendall, she is 23. And we've got Josh, who's 19. No, he's, you know, Josh is 20 now. And then Jake is a sophomore at Palm Harbor. He's 15. And then Ryan is 9. And so, yeah, they've kind of grown up with this. It's normal to them. You know, the fact that dad is always gone during the week. But you know what? There's a lot of people who work the 3 to 11 shift. You know, I mean, there are, you know, health professionals and you know, so okay. It's not that it's that unusual. Yeah. I just think we make
it work. I did it at a hotel for a while.
What's that?
I did it at a hotel for a while, working the afternoon.
It's a really tough shift for your family. I mean, it really is. And my wife has pretty much accepted it, and she is amazing because she realizes that kind of during the week, she's almost a single mom. You know, because I'm not there to help out in the afternoon or the evening. And that's why the weekends, you know, and we sometimes get into it a little bit because when I'm on the weekend, I want to be home with the kids. I want to see the family. You know, and she sometimes likes to go out with her friends and go and do stuff as with adults. But I'd rather stay home with the kids because I don't see them very much during the
week. Yeah.
So that's really one of the only challenges that we've kind of, like everybody, you find a middle ground. But yeah, it's there's no magic solution for or you know magic elixir or whatever that works for us. I just think, you know, I do my best to be present even if it's remote. You know, I talk to my kids all the time on the phone several times a day. You know, and we try to make the most of the weekends. But yeah, with six kids, it certainly it is a challenge. And you know, with her. Every parent knows you're a taxi service and usually have two parents to do the trick. But with her, it's just her during the week at least.
Yeah, I think you hit a really important point there, which is being present. We had Lee Cockerell on the show not that long ago. I don't know if you know who that is. He was a marketer for Disney and opened up World Resorts and things like that. But I mean, he talked about being away from the family, you know, he's in Paris or he's wherever he is, you know, and just the intentionality that he put behind when I was home, you know, and, you know, I mean, he's older, so he wasn't like struggling with like being on his phone and things like that. But, you know, this idea of when I'm home, I can put my phone away, you know, and I don't have to be on it all the time, but being intentional with your time. And I think that's something that for me anyway, when I get home, sometimes I think I'm tired. I've been working all day. I just want to sit on the couch and fall asleep or veg out or watch TV or whatever. And you know, my wife is always encouraging me, you know, hey, you know, let's be present with our kids when we're at home or when you're at home, because I mean, recognize that you have to work, but putting in that time as well when you're at home. And
it's true, but
I guess the intentionality.
It's still, you know, my job is 24/7.
Right.
And I think people, they're, Jerry, are you really posting at 4 o'clock in the morning? Yeah. You know, are you really posting 7 days a week? Yeah. I mean, that's the expectation of my job now. So there is no downtime ever.
Right.
When we go on a family vacation, I am still updating 24/7. When we're on a cruise ship, I'm still updating 24/7. I mean, that is the expectation. And clearly I like it. It isn't that they have to twist my arm to do it, but it still it takes time. And, you know, as you said, you know, it can take time away from your family. So I guess it's always been the norm for my kids. It's what they've always known. So they've never seen anything different. But I still feel like we've got six really great, successful, loving kids. And I mean, I think my wife is pretty much 99% responsible for that success because she was there and was really able to make a challenging situation work. And I can try my best, you know, to, especially on the weekends, but I give her all the credit.
Yeah. It's amazing. I have another fun weather question for you. Do you have access to, I mean, like we have, there's apps and stuff where you're looking at radar and things like that. But as a meteorologist, do you have access to things that update quicker or more high tech?
Well,
you know, I know that you guys were talking on the one where it was like a wind map radar, where you're looking at wind direction and things like that. Are those things that are normally open to public access, or is that something that is specific? Like, can I be looking at the same thing that you're looking at?
Yeah, they are now. Most of them are subscription based. Because you're getting higher level data from the weather. It all comes from the weather service. I mean, it all originates from the weather service. Now, there are some stations that have, you know, a radar that gives you access to that stuff, but usually it's 5 minutes old. So if you're, you know, if you're wanting, you know, level two data that is almost as real time as you can get, especially in what you're talking about is velocity, because when most people look at a radar and it's rain, you're looking at what's called reflectivity. It's the radar beam bouncing off the raindrops. Velocity is measuring not just the velocity of the wind, but also the direction of the wind. And that's obviously, and you know this, being a weather nerd like me, you know, when you look at velocity, you can tell if there's rotation. And that's what you look for tornadoes. So, yeah, there's a lot. And honestly, I don't even have a preference one or another. There's, if you go on, you know, you're on your phone, whether it's Android or Apple, I mean, you can look at the most popular radar apps, and typically the ones that are really good, there is a fee. It's not really outlandish, usually a couple bucks a month. You can get real time live data. Like anybody, like a meteorologist would be looking at.
Or they just jump on and they watch Dennis Phillips live.
We are on a lot.
if there's anything extreme happening, you're typically on. So, which is, again, it does bring a sense of stability and comfort. So I just know that you're making a difference, and the sacrifices that you're making for your family have a huge impact on the community for what you're doing.
Well, actually,
and I love hearing, though, that in the midst of it all, just the reality, you have a big family, and you guys are figuring it out, and no family is the same. You have to make your adjustments and figure out what works for you, and that's I love it. I just love seeing it at work and seeing it play out and seeing it be successful. So within reason.
Well, that's like everybody else. It's trial and error, you know? I mean, nobody gets a handbook on how to do this. And you just, after doing it for many, many years, and obviously it was a lot easier for the fourth or the fifth or the sixth kid than it was for the second. It's your first child, you're probably way more, oh, don't do that, or you're going to get hurt. And by the fourth, like, you're fine, you know?
I remember when we were taking our firstborn home from the hospital, I remember thinking, why are they letting us do this? We should not be allowed to take this thing home. I think I mentioned it to you, we have four kids. But they're all like very close. We have a 12-year-old, a 10-year-old, and then 8-year-old twins. And so they're all like right there squished together. You know, you figure it out, and you make decisions, and you figure it out, and you love your kids the best that you can, you know, and you teach them and help them be well-rounded adults when they get older. That's the goal, right? Yeah. So if you had one, if you could give an advice to dads out there, if you had like, I mean, you have a 9-year-old, but you also have older kids. What would be like a kernel of wisdom that you would like to pass along to dads that would be listening to this podcast?
That's tricky. One thing that I'd noticed for me, and this was a learning experience for me. So I always thought that it was my responsibility to treat, and this is just my opinion, I might be wrong, but I always thought that it was my responsibility to treat all the kids the same, because I would not want to treat one differently than the other, because maybe they might think that would be me showing favoritism toward one or the other. And I noticed through the years with different children who have different personalities, you just can't do it. Like my oldest son is, and my daughter, my first daughter, very strong-willed. And I'm a disciplinarian. I am a disciplinarian. And, you know, when I would look at them and get down on them and be like, this is what you have to do and this is why. And they would, and I would raise my voice and that tone would be there. They would look me in the eye and they would hear what I was saying and they could comprehend it and they knew why they were in trouble or what was going on and they moved forward. Two of my other children were the complete opposite of that because they were more fragile on the outside. Mm-hmm. And if they would hear me raise my voice, they would immediately go into a shell and they wouldn't hear anything that I was saying, even though the message was the same. And my goal was, I want them to all know that they're all the same and I treat them all the same and love them all the same. But for me, I found out that just did not work. So I had to temper the way that I treated a child differently, depending on how that child was as a person. I could not come down as hard on one as the other because they would not be hearing a word I was saying because they would just be, you know, recoiling because they knew they were in trouble and they didn't hear anything else. So for me, my advice is you have to recognize what your child's personality is and temper the way that you handle discipline or other things to a way that they will be most, it'll be most effective with them, yeah, as opposed to, yeah, just treating everybody the same and thinking that you're doing it the right way. Because for me, that didn't work.
Yeah, yeah, we get that. We have two and two, you know, one, you know, two that can handle it, and then two that they just break down immediately. But we actually, our youngest son, he even as a baby, like the three would be playing together and he would be by himself. And my wife would always take him away from playing by himself and almost like feeling bad for him, forcing him to play with the other kids. Mm-hmm. And he would get upset and start crying until you took him back and let him. And we've learned, like, even if we watch a family movie, halfway through, he just gets up and leaves. And it's like, all right, I'm done with family time. I need my alone time now. Mm-hmm. And we've just learned to be okay with it. Like, that's just who he is. And he likes to go and use his imagination and be on his own for a little bit and be in his head. And so you kind of, that I think that falls down into being present with, being in tune with who your kids are and recognizing we're all wired a little bit differently. And so figuring out who they are and then adapting, not your morals or adapting what's right and what's wrong, but adapting how you present that information so that they can hear it and receive it and respond to it.
Agreed.
That's really good. I love it. Well, Dennis, I just so appreciate you taking the time to chat with me. Thankfully, there's nothing crazy going on in the weather system today, so we were able to get together. But man, I just want you to know I appreciate you. Keep doing what you're doing. You're an amazing human being, and so thank you for what you do for Tampa.
My pleasure. It was a good time. Thank you so much for inviting me.
You bet, man. Thank you guys for listening. Remember that we have a new episode that comes out every single Wednesday. Please be sure to check us out. If you loved what we were talking about today and you think there's someone out there that would love to listen to Dennis Phillips, please share this episode with them. Let them know that we're here, and we will catch you again next week.
Thank you so much for listening to the Strong by Design podcast. If you found value in today's episode, please subscribe so that more people can find out about our show. Plus, you don't want to miss any future episodes with the amazing guests and topics we have lined up for you.